We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, here's one from John A1. We're getting close to the end of John's questions, Ryan.
Man, John got in there early, like almost always. He says, how does Christian Gray's upside stack up with Chance Tucker and Ryan Barnes?
He's got higher upside than both of them. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, he's faster than both of them.
Yes.
He's much faster. Chance Tucker has a really good feel for the position. He's a very natural, instinctive cover guy. He just doesn't run like Christian Gray does.
Yeah.
And Christian's got some good natural power. Ryan's thing is Ryan's got excellent. He's explosive. He's big. He's long. He's got, he can hit. He just doesn't show the coverage instincts. And from what I've been told, his consistency is like, he'll have days in practice where he's like, I think we said this last year, but I've heard this from people at Notre Dame, several people, like there are days where you're like, this is our best corner. This guy has played better than anybody played today or like a week. And then he'll have a day where you're just like, this guy can't cover anybody. He's messing up his assignments. He's not doing what he needs to do. And you can't have that at corner. You just can't. You can't have a guy that on first and second down looks like an NFL first round draft pick on third down, doesn't know what he's supposed to do and gives up a 70-yard touchdown. Can't do that. And that's going to be the big key for him. But yeah, but Christian Gray has a lot of those same tools. Great feel for coverage, instinctive, smart, but he's fast.
Yes.
And that's the difference.
I think speed is the separator. I got sent a couple clips, Brian, of Braylon James in the first practice where he was working against Ryan Barnes and just seemed like Braylon was just beating him off the line, man, and just running by him a little bit, you know? And it's just like, I understand Braylon's fast, but like Ryan Barnes is a third year player now, right? It's like, you know, let's get the technical side from the line of scrimmage to transitions a little better. And then maybe you can match that speed. I just don't think that he has incredible speed. But I think that Christian Gray has everything that you need to be a very good player at Notre Dame, right? Like he's got the feel, he's got the body type, he's got the length, he's got the speed. Everything's there. It's just you might not see it a ton this year potentially because you have so many good corners on the roster right now, you know?
Yeah.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
All right, let's get to some more here, Ryan. Here's from Paul Hamilton.
His question is, I thought Avery Davis retired. Why was he participating in the pro day?
I never saw that he retired. I just saw that he was not going to come back to Notre Dame. Braden Lindsay retired from football. That's who
retired. Yeah.
Not Avery Davis.
I still would have loved to see Braden Lindsay just test at the pro day, even if he's not going to go for the NFL. And go
run at the pro day. Yes, 100%. 100%. Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
That's selfish on my part. I just wanted to see what he'd be able to do as a tester because I think he would have tested very well in several aspects.
Yep, absolutely. Let's get to some quite more here, Ryan. We got some really good stuff. That was the question about Christian Gray. I thought was a really good one.
It is. This question from Coach Bent 574. If you guys were Notre Dame head coach, who would be on your coaching staff? Current coaches only and no one on the current Notre Dame staff.
Oh, my gosh.
Wait, so can I take head coaches and put them as position coaches? Am I allowed to do that in this conversation?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, yeah. So my defensive coordinator's Kirby Smart. My corners coach is Nick Saban. Yeah. My quarterback's coach is Ryan Day. Let's see here. My receiver's coach is Dabo. All right. So I'm going there. Harry Hestand's my O-line coach. Let's see here.
Oh, he's not a current coach. He's retired. No. You can't use Harry. He's retired. Not current. Yeah,
current coach. He hasn't gone through a season yet, right? He'd been retired before. If I had to go with a current coach and I couldn't use Harry, I'd probably go with Kyle Flood. It's probably who I'd go with. He'd be in that conversation for me.
Yeah.
My offensive coordinator would not be Ryan Day. He'd be my quarterback's coach. My offensive coordinator would be Kalen DeBoer. He'd be my offensive coordinator. Yeah. There's no doubt about that. When I'd have Chip Long as my defensive ends coach, my defensive line coach. I don't know who my defensive line coach would be, Ryan. I'd have to think about that one. I'm not sure I could tell you who that would be. My safeties coach is Mike Elko. There's no doubt about that one. I think he might be in the NFL now, but a guy that I thought did a great job as a D-line coach, I think he was with the Giants for a while. I think it was Sean Spencer.
Yes.
Used to be the D-line coach for he's back in college now. He's at Florida. Okay.
Yes. Yes, he is. Yep.
Yeah.
I saw that before.
He'd be my D-line coach. I thought he did a great job with Penn State coaching the D-line. He'd be my D-line coach. Yeah, he definitely would be there for me. There's no doubt. My running backs coach, if I can't use Dylan, then it's Tony Alford. That's a no-brainer for me. That's a no-brainer. Oh, actually, you know what? I don't know if I would go with Kyle Flood. It's hard for me to go against what Sherrod Moore is doing at Michigan right now.
Yeah, back-to-back.
And they're not an overly talented – we said this earlier in the week. They're not an overly talented offensive line. They just play incredibly well together. Yeah. He's doing a great job with that.
And they're not getting, like, super recruits in there either, right? It's just like he's just coaching them up, man.
Right.
Just coaching them
up.
They
have some – I mean, Zach Zinner had decent ranking and – you know, Ryan Hayes had a decent ranking. And the funny thing is some of their highest ranked guys didn't pan out. They had that Chuck Filiaga guy who was a pretty highly ranked guy. He hasn't panned out. But, yeah, I mean, they've had some guys that weren't really ranked that high. He just, like you said, there's no one great player. Zach Zinter, you said, is probably their best. But they just play so well as a unit.
Right.
They replaced two or three starters from last year's team, go get the transfer from Virginia, and they just – kept going, just plug kept going. And I think you can make a case that at some times their O-line this year by the end of the year was better than their O-line was the year before. I would argue that.
Yeah.
I think it was I would make that case. So because I think their center was so much better. But like you said, Ryan, he's not John Michael Schmitz.
No.
In my opinion, he's not even Jarrett Patterson, in my opinion, as a center. But he just, they were just, man, they were just a really good unit. Just a really good unit. Who'd be my special teams coordinator? I mean, it's Brian. No, you know who my special teams coordinator would be? Because a guy that's done it for a long time and a guy that is not just good in like certain parts of it is, and this is who, there was two coaches that I wanted Notre Dame to hire special teams coach. One is Justin Lesso because he's a good friend of mine. But the other one is LeVar Woods at Iowa. His special teams are outstanding year after year after. They rank in the top 5 to 10 every year in special teams at Iowa. Every year. And so I think he'd be a guy that I would absolutely look at. Because, again, I can't use Marty Biagi because he's gone. But he's been their special teams coordinator since 2018, Ryan. I'm going to pull up the FEI rankings and just read these to you. Because when I was doing research for who I thought Notre Dame should look at, I was like, man, this guy's doing a pretty good job. So I'm gonna pull these up for you and give you these rankings. So his first year, right, they ranked 13th, and then 2019 they ranked, let's see here, third. In 2020 they ranked 10th. That was the COVID year. 2021 they ranked second, and this year in 2022 they ranked 12th. So this was his worst special teams he had, and they ranked 12th.
Yeah,
like, and that's consistently. That's from, you know, that's a guy that's been doing that since 2018, and they've been that way. And so, like, to me, that impressed me a lot. And here's the thing: the year before he got there, they weren't terrible, but they ranked 22nd in special teams the year before he got there. And Iowa's always had quality special teams, but that guy's been, but that's part of the reason I like him too, is because he has been under a coach who's always valued the importance of special teams play over his career. And yeah, he's a guy that played special teams in college and in the NFL. So LeVar Woods would be my special teams coordinator if I had to do that.
Did he play? His name sounds really familiar to me. Like,
yeah, I think he was in the NFL for a minute.
Makes sense. His name sounds really familiar to me.
Let me find it here real quick. Let's see here. During his NFL playing career, Woods played for the Arizona, Chicago, Detroit, and Tennessee.
Okay.
In 88 career games played, he had 168 tackles, 2.5 sacks, 4 fumble recoveries, and 1 forced fumble.
Okay.
So
I think I remember him a little bit as a player. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And he's coached a position. He's coached linebackers. He's coached tight ends. He's done other things during his career. So he could coach a position as well. So, yeah, that's where I would go. So, yeah, this is a good one. I like those questions.
Yep.
And, Ryan, I'm going to ask this because it's a recruiting question, so I'll let you answer that one. He goes, Nathan Milton asks, what's the skinny on Ryan Wingo and Elijah Rushing?
I mean, there's just not much update on Ryan Wingo. I mean, I'm supposed to be getting a little bit of intel as far as, you know, what if there is a chance that he's going to revisit Notre Dame sometime this spring or summer pretty soon. But I'll say this right now, Nathan, to my knowledge, that visit has not been set up. If Notre Dame gets Ryan Wingo back on campus, I think they have a puncher's chance. But if he doesn't come back this spring or summer, then that's all she wrote, in my opinion, on the Ryan Wingo conversation, right? Yeah. Elijah Rushing, it's a surprising one, man. I mean, this is where I am with Rushing. I would still not predict him to end up at Notre Dame, but the fact that they're getting him for an official visit on the 9th through the 11th, I think is very good sign for Notre Dame. I think it is. I mean, anytime that you can get the kid to come back for his third visit and one being an official visit, you have some sort of chance, right? Like, again, I still would not predict Elijah Rushing to end up with Notre Dame, but clearly they haven't given up. Clearly there is some attraction to Notre Dame from Elijah Rushing's side. So, again, get him on campus, blow him away, and maybe you have a shot when it's all said and done. But, you know, at the end of the day, you got him coming back on campus, which is a great sign. Get Ryan Wingo. I think you have to get him back on campus. I think you have a puncher's chance. If you don't get him back on campus, then that conversation's over, in my opinion.
Yep. That's a good one. Good one. Here we go from Christopher Crosby. Got another one from Christopher. Actually, I'll read this one. It's a draft one for you. He says, where the Ravens pick and the draft board drying up so fast, would it be better trading back into the second round and getting someone like Josh Downs or my steal of the draft, Clark Phillips? I know he's going to he's going to make you happy with that mention of Clark Phillips, right?
Those are two of my favorite players in the draft. I love Joshua Downs, and I like love Clark Phillips, cornerback out of Utah. Where, I'm trying to remember where the Ravens pick in this draft. Are they
late teens? Let me look it up here real quick, Ryan.
I think they might be late teens. I can't remember, though, because they didn't make the playoffs this year, did they?
Yeah, they did. Because remember, they had that big deal where Lamar didn't travel with
the team. So they're like early 20s is where they're picking, right?
Yeah, like they picked 22nd, and then their next pick is the 86. So the question would be is, okay, if there's not a lot of difference between a guy picking 22nd and a guy picking 35th or 40th, you know, which I've heard people say, like there's not a lot of difference. Because there's I've heard there's decent depth in the draft, but just not a lot of high-level guys. Then do you pick up extra picks for next year's draft class, or do you try to pick up extra picks for later in this draft? I think that would be the conversation. But
yeah, I think that for me, if you really want a wide receiver, Christopher, for the Ravens, which I think they do, I would hope that they do because their wide receivers are just not a great position right now. I think that you would be better served trading back than sticking at 22 because like in Brian's situation there, if you're at like 35 or so or 40 or whatever it ends up being, you might have a chance to get a Joshua Downs or a Zay Flowers potentially, or, you know, another, you know, maybe a Cedric Tillman's a guy you like, maybe Jalen Hyatt's still there out of Tennessee. Like there's a plethora of good second round wide receivers in the 2023 draft. In my opinion, I don't think it's a great draft for first round wide receivers. I do not think it is. So trading back, I think would be a good option. Clark Phillips, man, I mean, it's my guy. Everyone's overlooking him now because he's 5'9". It's like, yeah, guys, he was 5'9 on film too. And he was still really dang good. So, yeah, I really like Clark Phillips a lot. He is a guy that day one nickel, but I also think that he could play outside in certain defenses. I really do. He's a really smart football player. So good options, I think, if you're the Ravens.
Yeah. All right, next one, Ryan. Here we go. Let's keep rocking and rolling here.
USMA87 said, how did Estimate look in person? The pics I have seen, he looks a little leaner than last year.
Well, I think it's because he didn't have pads on. I mean, he's still pretty rocked up to me. So I think a lot of it is you don't have pads on. So he's going to look a little leaner when you don't have pads on. But no, he looks pretty good. And look, this is certain players are going to want to get bigger this time of year and then work some of that weight off. Other guys are going to lose weight and then add it on over the summer months. So that's going to be part of it too, is this March and April is just part of the process of preparing for August and September, October, November. You're not meant to be in peak shape for like season shape. Now you're in March shape. You're in March condition. You're working, on different aspects of your body at this time. For some guys, that means they need to get built up a little bit and then refine it, or maybe work some of it off. I got to get the weight on you now so we can then reshape it over the next 6 months. Other guys, it's, hey, let's trim some of that fat off and then build the muscle back up by the time we get to August. So guys are different places. And I hope that Audric is a little leaner, because I thought that was one of my concerns about him, is I thought he was a little too yoked last year, Ryan, and a little tightly wound, in my opinion. So I wouldn't mind seeing him, you know, maybe focus on, like, if I was the strength coach, I'd say, hey, let's work on building your strength endurance up, as opposed to just having you be this monster. You know what I mean? Let's work on, can you do this for 60 snaps if the need was there? You know, and that would be where I would want to have that conversation with Audric. But again, it's nitpicking a little bit, because he's pretty good player.
Yes, pretty good.
Yeah. All right, let's get to some more questions here.
Yep. And this one's from Christopher Crosby. Says, if the linebackers don't change and the only improvement they show is they know the system better, can you still win a championship with the defense, in your opinion? That's an interesting question.
It can.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, my initial thought was yes.
Because if they, what was the only issue they had last year? Knowing the system. Mistakes that came with knowing the system. If the only improvement is they know the system better, they're going to be better.
Yeah. It'll be better.
There's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah.
Because the one thing you and I have argued for a while, especially when it comes to like JD Bertrand and Marist, athleticism and talent is not their issue. The only guy with a talent flaw is Jack Kaiser. And that's only in certain situations when he's when his lack of length gets exposed. Jack can run.
Yeah.
Jack can move. Jack can come downhill and hit. It's just he's 6 foot, 6'1", with kind of short arms. And there are certain matchups where it's like, why are you asking him to run to chase over routes against North Carolina, against right. their slot receiver? I'm sorry, that's more of a coaching mistake than it was a Jack Kaiser mistake. But you don't, Jack's not a guy that's going to flip his hips and go run with people. He's a downhill guy. But talent's not their issue. It's knowing the defense. Because if Jalen Steed knows the defense, he's going to be a dude.
Yeah.
If Nolan Ziegler knows the defense, he's going to be a dude. If Marist knows the defense, he'll be better. I still think he has a control problem as a player, you know. But if JD's more locked on to the defense, he's going to be an even better player. And JD was good last year. JD Bertrand to me is the oddest kid on the team when it comes to how what I see on film and what Notre Dame fans say about him. It is the weirdest thing. Like
we talked about this yesterday.
Notre Dame fans that like have good things to say about JD Bertrand. I'm like, what are you watching? I don't get it.
Brian, we were talking about this player. We were talking about this yesterday on the show. I'm like, JD Bertrand is going to end his Notre Dame career with almost 300 tackles, most likely, right? And it's just like, he's a pretty good player, man. Like he wasn't bad. Like
yes. No, he is. JD Bertrand is a good football player. Now, is he a great player? No. But JD's a good football player. I mean, Ryan, if he has 109 tackles this year, which is only 7 more than he had in 2021, he's at 300 tackles for his career. You know, and he's had 15 tackles for loss the last 2 years and 3 sacks.
That was so, my favorite part is someone in the chat yesterday was like, he only makes tackles 5 yards down the field. I'm like, you know who was second on the team in tackles for loss last year, right? Like he had 8.5 tackles for loss.
Here's the thing, Ryan, where does that come from?
Yeah.
Like that's the thing is like you say that to me and I'm like, no, that's not what I see. I don't know what you're looking at. I don't know what you're looking at. I don't understand where this mantra comes from.
I think Joe Schmidt hurt everyone, honestly, and they just associate
linebacker who was JD was so enamored with Notre Dame that he was willing to be a walk-on if that many could come here because he came from a family situation where they could afford to put him here. Yep. But he ended up being on scholarship. So I think that thought of him being willing to do that put in people's minds a walk-on.
Yeah.
He's not. He was a 4-star caliber kid coming out of high school who was previously committed to Georgia, you know? And so I just don't understand where this anti JD Bertrand thing comes from. And you know, he can't run. Yes, he can.
I hate the extremes, Brian, because it's like you can say that JD is a good, solid football player and still say that you need to get better. Like, yeah, of course. Yes. Like, that's okay to say
It's okay to say both. He only makes plays down the field. JD Bertrand averaged more tackles for loss this season per game than Jalen Smith ever did in his career.
Yeah.
Because Jalen's best season ever was back-to-back years of 9 tackles for loss.
Yep.
And Jalen, in both of those years, Jalen did that in 13 games. JD this year in 12 games, and if you have to think about it, in 2 games he played, he missed half the games or half the plays. JD had 8.5 tackles for loss this year.
Right.
So is he a star? I'm not saying he's a star. I just don't understand where this anti-JD Bertrand thing comes from. I don't get it. You want to complain about Marist? I get it. You want to complain about Jack being exposed in certain situations? I get it. JD Bertrand was Notre Dame's best linebacker last year by far. And if what's around him gets better, he's going to get even better. So I really don't get this, Ryan. I do not understand. Like sometimes you can be like, okay, I think you guys are overstating it, but I understand where it's coming from. With this JD hate, I do not understand where it comes from. I really don't. It puzzles me. It really does puzzle me why more people aren't like, this kid's a good football player.
Yeah.
You know, and go back and look at him against Clemson. Like 12 tackles, 9 of them were solo against Clemson. He was really good that game.
That was probably really his best game of the year. That was probably his best game of the year. Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's get to the next one, Ryan.
From Nathan Milton, he says, hypothetically, can you either get Justin Scott or Keon Keeley? Which are you taking?
You can either get Justin Scott or Keon Keeley. Which are you taking? Look, I love Justin Scott, but that's not a question for me. It's Keon Keeley. Keon Keeley was the number one player in the country last year in all of high school football.
And he would be in this class, too. He would be in this class, too. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. He would be a – yeah. Now, look, I'm thrilled with either one of them. Either – now, and you could argue, Ryan, that Justin is the bigger need. And I think you can make a case for that, that Justin you have other big-time high-upside ends. You have other high-upside Vipers.
Yeah.
You don't have anyone on the roster like Justin Scott. You could make that case.
Well, you could say who's a player that helps your team or has an impact on what the state of your team right now more. And I would say Justin Scott. I mean, 310 pounds. He kind of transitions right in that defense early. I mean, Keon Keeley plays early too because he's special. Like, there's no doubt about that. But to your point, interior defensive line size and impact is more of a need than what the Viper position is, in my opinion. Right. So that's kind of where we are.
Yeah. That's a good question. I think that's a really good question. I think if I can only have pick one, I'm taking Keon, but there is a case that could be made, Ryan, that you have to draft for need. Yeah. Right. At sometimes. And what's better, Keon at Viper and whoever you have at three technique, or Justin Scott at three technique with Josh Burnham at Viper. That's where you could sell me on Justin Scott, but you'd have to sell me on it because y'all know how much I love Keon as a player. Like, Keon's got star potential. Mm-hmm. Justin Scott does too, but Keon to me is more ready. And again, this is based on junior film of the two players. Justin Scott could come out as a senior and end up being a better player. I mean, we'll see, because he's got tremendous tools. But Keon was a more dynamic player as a junior than Justin was as a junior. And part of that's because Justin was playing both ways. That has to be factored into it as well. He was playing O-line and D-line, where Keon was just a defensive player. So, yeah, it's a good question. And by the way, Christopher Crosby, this question right here sparked a conversation about JD. That doesn't mean that you're the reason that we are feeling the way that we're feeling about fans' views of JD. It's more of looking at it of that led to the conversation of some of the really ridiculous things that I've seen about him said on, especially, I mean, it's mostly on Twitter, but even on our board with some people that I consider to be good posters, sometimes will just say things you're like, wow, like, I don't see where you're getting that from. I have no clue where you're getting that from. You want to talk about they need to make a change at Will, Rover. Okay, we can have that conversation. But JD at Mike is a pretty good football player. And he's a captain. He's a great leader. And but you shouldn't just be a starter because you're a great leader. Joe Schmidt was a great leader. But he's a much different – look, I get why people view him that way as far as comparing him to Joe. But he is a way, way better player than what Joe Schmidt was. And I mean all due respect to Joe, because – I think the world of Joe Schmidt, for him to do what he did and get the most out of his ability. And then, and again, Joe was a better player before the injury. He still was nearly as good as JD is, but in 2014, Joe Schmidt was a much better player than he was in 2015. A kid like him with his lack of elite athletic tools cannot afford to have the kind of injury that Joe had in 2014. Just can't afford to have it. And a guy like him can't lose a step. And that's what killed him in 20, because he was a solid player in 2014. He was bad in 2015.
Yeah.
He was bad. And a lot of it was just, I think, the injury. He should not have been playing. I mean, play Niles, play Greer, play Jarrett Grace. And I thought the Jarrett Grace, when he got in at times that year, was a pretty good player. He's one kid who I still feel was one of the biggest what-ifs of the last decade. I still would have loved to have seen what Jarrett Grace could have done had he not blown his knee out. Or got his leg tore up. He was like 6'3". He was solid. He was a good athlete. He was instinctive. I think he could have been a dude at Notre. And I think if one of y'all listen to Lucky Lefty, if they ever do, I don't know if they do like questions a lot, ask Malik about Jarrett Grace. I'll bet you Malik will tell you that. If he doesn't get hurt, he would have been a dude. But Jarrett Grace coming out of Coleraine, right? I loved Jarrett Grace coming out. And then he got his knee torn up and he just was never the same athletically. I mean, to the point where, like, he couldn't even it wasn't just like a torn ACL. He had a devastating knee injury. And the fact that he even got on the field in 2015 says a lot about, like kind of like Jalen Smith,
Yeah.
Most guys don't even come back at all from that. And Jarrett came back and was still able to play a little bit, but he would have been a dude at Notre Dame if he didn't get hurt. I really believe that.
You said he came out of Coleraine, Ohio?
Coleraine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was part of the, I think, the 2011 class.
Yeah.
But, 2011 class. I think he could have been an absolute dude, had he not gotten hurt. So he broke his fibula. It was like a really bad injury.
Fibulas aren't great, man. They're not great.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. So, man, he was really good. And that was in 2013. So, yeah, it was a bummer. That was a bummer. But
isn't it crazy that 2013 was 10 years ago now?
I know. Wild? I know. It really is nuts. It really is nuts. It really is. And in 2013, Jarrett played 7 games and had 41 tackles. I mean, so he was coming along. He was starting to come along. Yeah, he really was. But it's one of the things that I hate about football. You just have that happen sometimes, you know?
Yep. Question from USMA87. Who is throwing to Mayer at Pro Day? Sam Hartman.
Yeah. Yep.
Which is awesome.
Now, so I got my thing here. So they did from out in the field, and then they did some red zone stuff. And I'm trying to count here 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. I counted 21 throws to the field, like out in the field, like from the 40 going in and then from like midfield going in, and not a single ball hit the ground. There was one higher throw, but the guy made the catch on it. He was thrown to Mayer. He was thrown to Jafar Armstrong. And then he was some kid named Hendricks, Ryan. Do you know who this was? Some receiver named Hendricks?
Oh, like, Indiana State. Yeah.
Indiana State. We knew he was from some smaller. I don't know if it was
Dante. Like I think it's Dante Hendricks.
Something like maybe? That. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thrown to him and not a single ball hit the ground. They had some misses in the red zone on some back shoulder stuff, but I mean, he was throwing some great deep balls. And I only have one. I have one wrote down as high. That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, and he was thinking like wide fades, go routes, post routes, deep over routes. They were a nice connection out on the field. There's no doubt about it.
That Hendricks kid was a really good player for Indiana State. I was happy. I'm glad that he got to show out at Notre Dame. That's good for him, man.
And then Jafar Armstrong did a pro day with Notre Dame today.
Yeah, he ended up at Northern Iowa.
Illinois. Yeah. Now, he might have transferred somewhere else this year. No, he transferred to Illinois from Notre Dame.
Huh.
So he might have transferred like Western Illinois or something like that after Illinois, but he went from Notre Dame to Illinois, and I think he went somewhere else after that.
Gotcha.
But he originally went to Illinois. So I'm looking here real quick. I think it's Western Illinois. Maybe he transferred to Western Illinois his last year.
Makes sense.
But he started his career at Notre Dame and then went to Illinois. So it looks like he had 28 catches for 363 yards this year for Illinois, Western Illinois, and then had 12 kick returns for 273 yards.
Western Illinois. Weird.
Like he was running routes. And he was like, like he was just like, you know, like, and I was like, dude, Jafar, what are you doing, man? What are you doing?
Western Illinois, man. And his year is a Leatherneck. Good for him.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. All right. Let's get to some more here, Ryan. Let's keep rocking and rolling. This is an interesting one right here.
Irish Blood had said, if Notre Dame joined a conference, what is your dream 12-team conference for Notre Dame to honor? Who is Notre Dame and win natties?
Whew, okay.
12-team conference.
What is your idea? I mean, we talked about this before, Ryan.
Yeah.
I've said, look, if Notre Dame should have, instead of, like, I wish they would have done more to and again, it's hard because there's TV contracts and all that, but if it was just about – I would have loved to see Notre Dame kind of like start like an American conference or some kind of, you know, big time conference where you take some of the old school independents and a couple of your rivals. So it'd be like Notre Dame and USC and UCLA, but Penn State, and it's just been a football conference. You know, take Penn State, take Virginia Tech, you know, try to get, because Florida State wants out of the AAC, ACC bad.
Yeah.
I take like Florida State, Miami. I take West Virginia, some teams like that. Just take a bunch of the old school independents that are big name programs and then a couple of your rivals. And I'd put Navy in there. Just, you know, you need to have somebody you can beat up on. Right. So, it'd be something like that, that I would want to have, you know, and just kind of go from there, probably get a 12 team league. I don't love 12 team leagues, Ryan. I like 10 team leagues, or I like 14 or bigger league teams, right? Because my whole thing is I want to have a situation where, like, I don't actually mind 16 team leagues. Just make your two divisions where there's really, you have like one crossover rival, but the rest of it is you're just gauged against your conference, and then you have the conference champ, or your division, and then you have the conference championship game. Like, I feel like if you're 10 or smaller is ideal if you want to play everybody and then have more non-conferences. But to me, it's like these 12 team leagues, it's like, okay, you're playing the five on your side and three on the other side, or four on the other side. It's like, okay, that can work for me, and you're playing everybody, but it's just, I don't know. It's like, there's like one team you're not going to play from the other side. It's almost like you can have, you know, either just don't play anybody on the other side at all, or just like one rivalry game, or just play your division and then, you know, play in the conference championship game or something like that. But I'd rather be 16 team conference where you just basically play eight on your side and then one crossover, and then just, you know, or play eight and just play your division, and then your two leagues play and for championship, you know, championship game, and then have more. I wish they'd have more non-conferences. The problem is, when they have more non-conferences, Ryan, teams end up playing crap non-conference games.
Yeah.
I don't like nine conference games. I don't. I want to see more crossover. I wish there would be more things where leagues kind of had, you had to play like two Power Five non-conferences, you know, get rid of non-conference games, and then get rid of FCS games, unless I would make exceptions. I've said this before. My exceptions would be, it's got to be a state school in your state.
Yep.
And, you know, like, if you're Florida State and you want to play, you know, FAMU, that's good. Is FAMU a state school? I don't think that they are, but some state school, right? It'd have to be like another state school, right? If you're Georgia and you want to play Savannah State, cool. It's an in-state school. You're helping that program out. You're helping another state program out. Or it's got to be a team that's finished in the top 25 at least once in the previous 3 years. Right? Like, okay. You want to go play Northern Iowa? Go for it. You want to play North Dakota State? Go for it. You know, you want to play Houston when they were balling? Go for it.
North Dakota State would never, man. North Dakota State would never.
They
stopped doing those, they stopped playing a bunch of FBS teams now for some reason. It's like they kind of just want to stay in their bubble now.
They played Arizona this past year.
North Dakota State did?
Yeah.
I thought Arizona beat them.
Yeah.
You're right.
They went through a couple of years, Ryan, where they weren't doing that, but that wasn't because of them. That was because teams wouldn't play them. Like, because they beat Iowa, they beat Iowa State, they were beating teams, and so teams just stopped playing them. And then, of course, 2020 hurt because, you know, obviously FCS got rid of football that year, which was really dumb. But yeah, that was a part of it. Is teams just stopped playing them because they were going to play in Division I teams and beating them.
Yeah,
and that they were like, yeah, screw that, man. We're not doing this anymore. Like, you schedule this team and you get whooped by them. A hard pass on that action.
People are gonna start avoiding South Dakota State. By the way, too, they almost beat Iowa this year. They beat the brakes off of what's her name's the year before. They destroyed Colorado State. Remember that game?
Oh yeah,
that game was like 60-something to 30 or something like that. Like, they beat the brakes off of Colorado State that year.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, that was. Yeah. Where did the Dakotas all of a sudden get good at football? It's really impressive.
It really is. It gets underrated too, because South Dakota and North Dakota, not the states, North Dakota and South Dakota are actually pretty good football teams as well. Like, they're not bad either, but it's like, but the North Dakota states and South Dakota states get all the conversation because they're just dominant.
Yep, they're really good. Yeah. Here's one from Vanilla Chill.
With the Shrewsbury hire, do you see more of a commitment to the B-ball program by Notre Dame?
I hope so. I mean, look, y'all have to understand something about me. I'm a show me guy with it when it comes to Notre Dame right now. You got to show me. From what I've been able to read, again, we don't cover basketball at Irish Breakdown. I've written two articles noting that the Shrewsbury hire, but like, I'm not like beating down the door trying to get scoop from people.
Yeah.
But from what I've been able to gather, it does seem that Notre Dame actually got into a bit of a back and forth with Shrewsbury for that. So, like, I don't know if Penn State eventually came with an even bigger offer, but Notre Dame didn't need to. Notre Dame didn't necessarily have to outbid for Shrewsbury. They just had to get close enough to where he could just, because he's an Indianapolis guy. He spent most of his coaching career in Indiana. You know, he coached. Yeah. He was the head coach at Indiana South Bend. He was an assistant coach under Brad Stevens at Butler. He spent two different stints at Purdue under Matt Painter. And then outside of that, the 2 years at Penn State and then his time with the Celtics working for Brad Stevens were his only time out of the state. So you just had to get – you had to be competitive. And from what everything I've been able to hear is Notre Dame made a pretty good offer to him. He's going to make over $3 million a year.
Nice.
You know, almost four, depending on who you talk to. I think Tom Noy from South Bend Tribune reported it's not quite the $4 million offer that people are saying it is, but it's at least in the ballpark. Which is a good offer. So you didn't get outbid for him. So that's a good first step, right?
Yep.
But also, it's not like Penn State's Duke. You know, they're not throwing as much money to basketball coaches Duke is or Syracuse is either.
Sure.
So I think, you know, I think it's a good sign, but it's going to be more about, okay, fine, you're paying him. But here's the rub. Are you going to then say, okay, but because we're paying you more, we're not going to give you as high of a coaching assistant coaching salary as we did before? We're not going to work with you on getting kids into school that, you know, those are the things that you'll really find out about whether or not they're really serious. But I hope it is. Look, here's the thing. Jack Swarbrick, as much as I like to bang on him, I want to be fair. I'm not going to bang on him just because they did spend a lot of money on getting a new basketball facility. Now, was it late? Yes, it was late, but it's still, from everything that I've been able to see, it's a really good basketball situation. I mean, Mike Bray just signed a really good recruiting class a year ago. They got a five-star in J.J. Starling. The Vin Lubin kid is excellent. Now, obviously, you've lost J.J. Starling. He's at Syracuse now. But, I mean, they were getting kids because, and that stuff helped. So, if you support it, yeah, I think basketball team can be pretty good. Because the other thing, too, is, you know, Notre Dame's the kind of school that can recruit. Like, I don't think that Notre Dame needs to recruit the five-stars a whole lot. If you can get a local guy, if you can get a Blake Wesley and a J.J. Starling to fit in, great. But I think Bray's recipe of getting the veterans that are going to stay for a long time is where Notre Dame needs to be.
Yep.
His problem wasn't that. His problem was you got some good pieces, but then you'd have complete whiffs on other things. Like, because you're having to play Nate Leshefsky like he's a big, because you failed to recruit that position worth a darn. And so now Nate has to play in the post more and defensively more, but he needed to be a pure stretch four, playing more three than five. And that's where he failed. But he just had a bunch of the same dude on his roster. And they play no defense whatsoever. And it just had gotten stale. But yeah. Notre Dame did not lack for quality basketball talent this year. They just the place had just gotten bad, and it was just the roster wasn't put together well. So Notre Dame's been trying, from an administration standpoint, to be better at basketball. I just think the timing of it, they should have supported Bray more 10 years ago.
Sure.
And not waited till now when it's you know, the rest of college basketball is caught up to him offensively. And now the fact that his teams can't defend is even more exposed, because they're not the unique team offensively they used to be. So I think you can criticize him there, but recently they've been doing what they need to do to support it. I think the issues lately have been him more so than the administration, if we're being fair. Yeah. Now, that wasn't always the case. For a while there, the administration was the problem. But like, he's made some bad hires. He's, you know, he brought some guys in that were former players. They got in trouble, or they didn't pan out. There's been some issues there. But I mean, that's on him, right? That's more on him. So, but I think they can get. It's an interesting situation too, because there's going to be no expectations for Micah Shrewsbury next year. None. He's going to have basically a brand new roster. I mean, just a completely brand new roster. So, I mean, I saw Cormac Ryan's going in the draft report. I'm like, how first? I didn't even realize that guy still had eligibility left.
Seriously, how long has he been playing, man? Yeah. It's wild.
But J.J. Starling's already at Syracuse. I mean, you're gonna be completely revamping. You're losing a bunch of dudes to no more eligibility left. They're going to be a completely brand new program. And Bray had just done such a bad job really just keeping this roster where it needed to be. But from everything I've heard, I like the hire. People have sold me on it. I didn't know a lot about him other than, you know, I think I had it. Ryan, what would my article say? This year was the first year that Penn State had won an NCAA tournament game since like 06 or something like that.
Yeah.
And he had been in the tournament in a decade, you know, and they second round game. They went down to the wire. They competed. And it was Texas, right? They played Texas in the second round, I believe. And it was a heck of a game and just lost it late. you know, but he did a great job there. He really did. Did a really good job there.
I want to get back to relevance, Brian. You know what stinks about this year is that it's been a really entertaining NCAA tournament, but I didn't get into college basketball at all this year because Notre Dame wasn't relevant, man. Right. I was just like, when Notre Dame's good, I follow college basketball a lot more. When Notre Dame's not good, I barely watch, if I'm being honest, right? And like I watched some of the game last night. Did you see the Kansas State game last night between Michigan State and Kansas State?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was a fantastic finish, man.
Did you see that fake that they did where the guy's like trying to argue this coach and they're setting up a lob? I was like, oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. That's really beautiful. Nice.
That's beautiful. Yeah. I forgot that. I didn't even know who their head coach was, Kansas State, because I just didn't follow basketball this year. I'm like, hey, Bruce Weber's not there anymore.
Bruce Weber.
And Frank Martin's not their coach anymore. Frank Martin. What happened?
Yeah. Yeah.
He took them to the Elite Eight, right? Frank Martin.
He did. He did. So, that was a good team. That those are like Jacob Pullen and those cats right back there. And that was no pun on them being the Wildcats, by the way. It was just the cats.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Brandon Plesner has a response to our stuff about J.D. Bertrand. He says, we would like more athletic linebackers like the Sneeds and Osbury's and Bowens, which is why LB recruiting is so frustrating. Some more length would be nice as well. But that's where I think you're missing the boat, Brandon, is J.D. Bertrand's an athletic kid. That's what I don't understand. Like, J.D. Bertrand's a pretty good athlete. There's not a lot of difference in athleticism between him and Drake Bowen. There's not.
Yeah.
In my opinion. Now, Jalen Sneed's a bit of a unicorn athletically, but there's not a huge gap between J.D. Bertrand and Jaden Osbury and Drake Bowen athletically. There is size-wise between Drake, but he's a much better athlete than Notre Dame fans give him credit for. I mean, much better athlete. I don't get that. Why? And Brandon's someone I respect, but like that JD can run. I mean, can he run like Jalen Sneed? No, but he can run.
And also, I would say, I mean, we're talking about recruiting here a little bit too, right? I mean, 2024 recruiting, linebacker recruiting is a mess, Brian, but do you think they're recruiting a bunch of undersized, not athletic kids though at linebacker? I wouldn't say that. No. I mean,
I don't
there's
love
some
the
wild Bodie cards.
Calhoun kid athletically, to be honest with you, but like, yeah, Cole Sullivan,
but he's still,
athlete.
Yeah, but even Bodie's still 6'2" with solid length though. Like, he's not a short dude. Like, you know what I mean?
This year, I don't like the, I'm frustrated by the linebacker recruiting. Sure.
Yeah.
But it's also coming 2 years in a row after really good classes. And it's not a great year at linebacker anyway.
Right.
It's not. So, I mean, I get that. But some of the 2025 linebackers we've seen so far are pretty long and pretty dang athletic. I mean, I think part of the issue with 2024 class, Ryan, is there's some frustrations at positions that just aren't strong classes nationally.
Yeah.
You know, and I think some kids just aren't getting the love because they're not ranked real high. Like the safety, I mean, Jalen McClain is a really good darn. I don't care what his ranking says. That's a good freaking football player.
Yeah.
So, give me that kid. It's a good football player.
Yeah, I agree. I think the biggest push for me back on the J.D. Bertrand thing is I don't think J.D. Bertrand is unathletic or anything. I think J.D. lacks size, which causes him to miss tackles at times. I don't think he has a great tackle radius, but I don't think he's unathletic. No, I don't
think
that.
I mean, the length thing with J.D. I get, and that was the issue that he had a little bit in coverage as a will and why he missed tackles as a will. But I think as a Mike, we haven't seen as many of those issues. You saw some out of place issues, but that was across the board, and that was more, again, that's more of a coaching thing. That's why you get frustrated. Oh, put the young guys in. If these fifth seniors can't figure the defense out better, you think some freshman's going to figure the defense out better? The problem was the coaching, not necessarily the talent in some of these positions, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So Yeah. Yeah. JD can
run.
We'll see, man. He can run. I get the people don't think he can, but JD can run. He can run. I mean, Drew White ran like a 4.6. Yeah. And Drew White's 40 time was almost identical to N'Kobe Dean's. Actually, he was faster than N'Kobe Dean.
4.67 or something,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So, which for a Mike linebacker is running well. His problem is he did that at 220.
Right, yeah.
And at 220, you need to be a 4.5 if you're going to be play at the next level. But 4.6, 4.7 is still moving for a middle linebacker.
Yep.
And I'd be willing to bet you a steak dinner, Ryan, that J.D. Bertrand runs a better 40 time than Drew White does.
And very possible.
I'd be surprised if he doesn't run a better time than Drew White did, because he plays faster than Drew. That's for sure. And Drew was a solid football player too. He just was small.
Yes.
That was the problem. He just was small.
If your conversation is that, again, like I always think that you want to improve, right? Like you always want to shoot better, shoot higher, better caliber players. But if the length thing is the biggest conversation, like, cool, man, I'm there. Like if you want a lengthier middle linebacker, I'm good with that. I get that. That's the margin for error thing we talk about all the time, right? Like guys that have length have a larger margin for error at times. Like that's kind of where we're looking at. So if that's the conversation, sure. I just fight back against the athleticism thing. I don't think he's a bad athlete. I think he's not long. He's not a long dude. There's no doubt about that.
Right. Here's a very interesting question, Ryan.
From Nathan Melton, you're surrounded by a bunch of angry fans who are about to start something. Which IB staffer is most likely to talk their way out of it? Talk their way out of it.
Huh? I don't think we have anybody on staff that would be able to. I think we would all have the same.
Sean Stiers, maybe.
Yeah, Sean Stiers, maybe.
Yeah.
But no, but hey, if you knew Sean like I knew Sean.
Yeah.
Sean's fiery. Like, Sean doesn't take any BS. Like, he has this, like, really good demeanor on radio and on the shows, and he's very, like, and he's a good host, and he'll allow the co-host to talk more and set people up. He's a good interviewer. He's experienced. That's why I hired him.
Yeah,
you knew him, Percy. Sean's got a bit of a temper like I have and like you have. And I told y'all at the Ohio State game, Vince was like purposely bumping into Ohio State fans because he's pissed about how the game went. So like I'm trying to publish a story, and Vince is supposed to be like staying in front of me so I could like do this and not bump. And Vince, I look up and Vince is like peacocking in front of him, you know, trying to purposely like get a source by bumping into people because he wants someone to say something to him. And I'm like, Vince, come on, man. And Sean, Ryan, you know my temper. So,
I'm not confrontational. I would just,
right. Yeah. You're so full of it.
Peace and love, baby. Peace and love. Yeah.
Maybe Sean Stiers. I don't know. Cause he's got that veteran wisdom. I guess that's my best answer, but I don't know if any of us have the temperament to talk our way out of it. I think we'd all probably rather fight our way out of it. So, who knows? But yeah,
someone said Vince would throw the first punch.
Oh, Vince would absolutely. Vince would like jump on the other side and like get in their ears, like, you know, trying to instigate stuff. You know, that's what Vince would be doing. Yeah, that's what absolutely what Vince would be doing. No question. Vince would throw the first punch. Facts. Facts.
From Vanilla Chill, he said, can you see Avery Davis making at least a practice squad if he can be healthy enough for camps for NFL teams?
Yes.
I think so. Look, Vanilla Chill, here's a little piece of it's not that much of an intel. I think I've said this on the show before, but so there's one entity that goes around and they do the spring scouting every year. It's called NFS. NFS had Avery Davis, one of the scouts for them, had him with a 7th-round grade coming into the year this year. So they had a borderline draftable grade on Avery Davis. I think Avery Davis was well-liked in NFL circles. The question now is, you know, coming back from the injury and everything, right? Like, that's kind of the biggest question mark with Avery. But would it shock me if Avery Davis is on a practice squad next year? Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Would I be shocked if Avery Davis lasted in the NFL for like 3 or 4 years? Mm-hmm. No, I wouldn't either. Like, I think he could play
longer than that. I really do. It's if he's healthy, Ryan, because I still think he's a very raw football player because he hasn't really been coached. If I'm an NFL team who runs an offense that requires quickness and good route running and all that kind of stuff, I'm going to try to sign him and stash him away on my practice squad for a year or two in hopes of kind of getting him coached up and getting him back. And then maybe I might have something, but I think he'd have a shot to do that. I'm not betting on it because of the injury. I think the injury is, you know, cause he's had the problem is he's had multiple lower body injuries, And I don't think he was a kid. He's athletic, Ryan, but I don't know if he's athletic enough to have that kind of injury history.
And he was underdeveloped, obviously, with coaching early on in his career and some position changes, too. Like, this year would have been great for Avery to really take his game technically to another level as well, you know? So,
yeah.
Missed out some time, unfortunately.
Yep, absolutely.
Next question is from John A1. Is Chris Tyree still the best home run threat in the running back room?
Yes, but it's not the gap that it used to be.
Yeah.
I mean, it used to be like it was not even close. But now with Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price, you have three legit home. I mean, and when we say home run threats, like look, Logan Diggs had a 75-yard touchdown last year, right? I mean, Tony Jones had an 85-yard touchdown. And, you know, the Broncos went years where they had very few Notre Dame guys. You had Ryan Harris for a minute and David Bruton for a little bit. And for whatever reason, the Broncos just haven't been a big pro Notre Dame team. I'm very happy to see that they signed Mike McGlinchey and Tony Jones Jr. This offseason. So I have a little bit more of a reason to watch and root for the Broncos now that there's some Notre Dame guys on there. So that'll help a little bit. But
yeah.
I mean, you've got three legit home run threats now with Tyree, Jadarian Price, and Jeremiah Love. No doubt.
And they're all different styles of home run threats, which is cool too, right? I mean, it's like neither one of those guys is as fast as Chris Tyree, obviously. But like those two other guys are going to maybe break some more tackles to get more opportunities to break into the open than maybe a Chris Tyree will. So it's just a different style, which is fun.
Yeah. All right. Let's see here. Let's get some more here, Ryan.
From Christopher Crosby. Has there ever been a reason given why Junior Tuilagamaka is playing Viper? To me, he screams middle linebacker. Do they just want to get him on the field until JD is gone? I think his JD is solid, so I would get that.
I think that would be a mistake if that was the reasoning.
At his age, especially. He's still developing.
You're going to waste, you know, because he it's not like he redshirted last year. He blew his redshirt on special teams alone. Yeah. So let him learn there and then maybe cross train him at Viper for certain looks if you want to. But I mean, they flat out moved him.
Yeah.
So no, I don't know. It's confusing. I don't know what Al Golden wants, Ryan. I can't figure out what he wants. And part of it's because he hasn't been here long enough, right? So, but he's not recruiting a lot of guys with junior size, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But then when you do get guys here, you keep talking to them about get your weight up. Well, I mean, well, you know, what? Figure it out, dude.
You already had a guy with those weight up. Yeah.
But I thought he moved. I thought he looked great in the spring game last year. I thought he did. I mean, I thought he moved well. He made tackles. He played side to side. I was shocked when they moved him. It just didn't make a lot of sense to me.
Sure.
It really didn't. And maybe he didn't look fast in the fall because you were asking him to do so much mentally and he wasn't playing fast. But I think it was a mistake, in my opinion. I really do.
Question for We Are Not Marshall. I feel like we haven't heard from you in a while, sir.
Yeah.
Alabama moved Jahmyr Gibbs all over the field last year with great success. Can Notre Dame replicate that with Chris Tyree?
No, not really. He's a different type of athlete. I mean, they could move him around a lot, which we've advocated for, but not the same way you did with Jahmyr Gibbs, because Jahmyr's a lot shiftier than Chris Tyree. Chris Tyree's more explosive vertically. Not that Jahmyr's slow, but Chris Tyree's one of the fastest players in college football.
Yeah,
Jahmyr's more shifty.
I think Jahmyr ran like 4.36, so he's pretty fast as well. Yeah. To your point.
But he did not play like a 4.36 guy. He's shifty. He's quick. He's agile. He's elusive. Chris is a straight line guy. So with Jahmyr, I'm running a ton of screens with Jahmyr. I'm getting him in space. With Chris, I want to get him a crease. Get him a crease and he's going to go. With Jahmyr, it's get him in space and he'll make his own crease. You know what I mean, Ryan? Yeah. And Chris can't do that. That's not who Chris is.
Yeah.
And so, yes, you can use them both around, but Jahmyr's a guy that you just got to figure out a way to get the ball in his hands and get him in space and then let him do his thing. With Chris, it's get him in space, but then design it in a way where you're trying to get a crease where he can outrun people.
Yeah.
And that's my big thing. So they're just different. And Jahmyr's bigger. Like, he's a little bigger than Chris is as well. Especially
He's like 200 pounds. Yeah.
And he's like, what, 5'11"-ish? Or so
5'10", right? 5'11", something like that. Yeah.
Chris is 5'9". So I think that's part of it as well.
Yeah. I think that's a good note. I would say Jahmyr is just a little more creative out in space than what Chris is. But when you give Chris a crease, then you're cooking with grease. Like, that's where you're at.
Absolutely. No question about it. Ryan, I'm going to ask this one because it is a draft question. Vanilla okay. Chill, Ryan, Broderick Jones, Peter Skoronski, Paris Johnson. Who do you think is the best among them in the draft? Also, who do you think would fit the Bears the best out of them?
So I think this is a great conversation between floor and ceiling on this type of conversation piece. I think out of Paris Johnson Jr., Broderick Jones, Peter Skoronski, Paris Johnson has the highest upside, in my opinion. You know, you're talking about a guy in Paris Johnson that is 6'6", 310-plus pounds, 36-plus inch arms, man. His length is just ridiculous, and he's a good athlete. I know people – I don't know if people saw his pro day film yesterday, Brian, but they did this nice little – he had to jump up, and then he had to work in a vertical set, and he had to quickly switch both stances, which was pretty wild, man. He was really smooth. The big thing about Paris Johnson, though, is that Paris Johnson only played 1 year at left tackle. He was a starting guard previously, so, like, he is not – near to his ceiling because he's literally only been – he only started 1 year at left tackle for Ohio State. So long-term upside, I think he has the most of the bunch. I would say the next highest is Broderick Jones because Broderick Jones has really nice foot quickness. He's a boulder, man, like great base that he plays with. But Peter Skoronski is the highest floor of the group. He's the best football player on that list right this second. But there's going to be questions for – I mean, there's going to be some teams that just aren't going to have Peter Skoronski on their offensive tackle board. There's going to be some that look past the arm length conversation and they leave him a tackle. There's going to be other teams that just aren't even going to bother to watch the film on if he can play offensive tackle or not. They're just going to say arm length, you can't do it type of conversation. So I would say Paris Johnson has the highest upside, followed by Broderick. Highest floor, though, is Peter Skoronski. Who fits best for the Bears? I mean, I think if you get any three, they're an upgrade over what you had last year, man. Like, it just was not great for the Bears last year. I know you got a steal in the left tackle, Braxton Jones, who's out of Southern Utah. I thought he played pretty well at left tackle for a sixth-round rookie. But whoever you get in this class, I think is going to be an upgrade at least one of the offensive line positions for the Chicago Bears. I would personally, if all three are on the board, I think I would take Paris Johnson just because I think that that upside is just so tremendous and you need a true blindside kid. But I mean, all of those three upgrade your offensive line. They just do.
Here's the thing with Paris Johnson too, Ryan. If you truly believe he has the highest upside and it's somewhat significant, and I would say you can make a case for that, then I would say you have to kind of go with him because the Bears aren't a Super Bowl team next year.
No.
They're hopefully in 2-3 years, you can build to that point, right? So you take that out of the higher ceiling. Peter Skoronski has the highest floor. And I would say that Broderick Jones is in the competition with him for floor. I think for me, Johnson and Jones are the two that I would go with. I'm still not 100% sold that Skoronski can be a tackle in the NFL. I'm still not 100% sold just because, you know, I've got my reasons. But the other two kids to me are for sure tackles. And I'll be honest with you, Ryan, when I first got into this, kind of looking at this draft class, I was not a huge fan of Broderick Jones. Thought he was good coming out of high school, but you know, he was kind of good, okay, last year. But I was like, okay, let me just never really noticed him, right? Never stood out to me.
Yeah.
But when I went out and really studied more film, I was like, okay, yeah, this guy's pretty good. Especially if you're a team that wants to run the football.
Yeah,
in my opinion,
plays with a great base. He's got the best base in the class, in my opinion, man. Yeah. He has just this really wide, powerful base. Always seems to be on balance, you know. Like his base never gets skinny, and that's one thing about Paris Johnson that is an inconsistency right now. Is sometimes his base gets a little narrow,
right,
and that affects his power profile because Paris Johnson's a strong dude, man. He's really powerful, but when you get that narrow base, you kind of lose a little bit of that power. Yep. Well, not a little bit. You lose a lot of that power profile. So there's some baseline things that need to get figured out in that regard. But I think that Broderick is a substantial floor, in my opinion. And he has offensive tackle traits. I mean, he's got 34-plus inch arms. He ran sub-5 in the 40-yard dash. He tested really well. He's got all the traits to play offensive tackle at the next level.
Yep. And look, Peter Skoronski would not be the first 32-and-a-quarter-inch arm length guy to be a really good tackle. We've seen it. It's
rare.
Yeah. And I don't know if he necessarily has the rare traits to be for. He strikes me a lot like a Zach Martin. This isn't to say I don't like Peter Skoronski a lot. If you needed a right tackle or a guard and you wanted to take him, sure. Okay. I think with the Bears specifically, Ryan, I think they need a left tackle. Would you agree with that? Like if they could move the kid they had last year over to right tackle and have like a true like top 10 caliber NFL draft caliber talent at left tackle, wouldn't that be better
sure.
for them? Yeah. Don't you think?
Yeah,
and that's sure. where I'm coming from, where I don't know if Peter Skoronski is that guy. You know, that's kind of where I look. It's like, would you be better off having Paris Johnson and Broderick Jones at left tackle and the kid you were talking about at right tackle, or that kid's at left tackle and Skoronski moves to right tackle? You know, that's kind of the way I look at it. I don't know if I would want Peter Skoronski playing left tackle for me. But that's obviously just my opinion. I know there's NFL teams and NFL scouts that don't agree with me on that. And
sure,
you know, take their word for that.
There's never a consensus among NFL teams, I've learned yeah. over the years.
Yeah. Even when there should be.
Yes.
Even when there should be.
It was like I mean, I liked RG3 and Baylor, but it was just like Andrew Luck, man. Like, what are we thinking of? What are we talking about here? You know, like, it's just such so easy. But yeah.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.